ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
At the Australian Open, I've lost to, I don't know, Rafa, Novak, Yannick twice, now Carlos. Like, I'm not losing too many matches to players I possibly shouldn't lose to. As tough as it is when you get results like this, you get back up, you get back on the horse, and that's it.
Alex de Minaur articulating two things. One, he cannot get past the GOAT ceiling at the Australian Open. Two, he has to keep going if he wants to. And after another valiant quarterfinal defeat, this time to world number one Carlos Alcaraz, he provided specific clarity in the aftermath as to what he needs to do if he wants to smash through that ceiling. Just as interesting, Alcaraz actually identified the same problem for de Minaur. We're explaining what that change is and asking whether he can make it. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Josh Eagle is a former Davis Cup coach, and he's here to talk about Alex de Minaur's exit from the Australian Open. Josh, a straight sets defeat for the Demon against world number one Carlos Alcaraz. But for me, the scoreline didn't always align with what I was seeing on court in terms of the contest. How did you assess that match for Alex?
I sort of agree with you. The scoreline, particularly in the second and third sets, were probably a little closer than what the scoreline did reflect. However, you know, he's got such a great record, Carlos Alcaraz, over Alex de Minaur. So I don't think that result really surprised anyone in the tennis world. That's for sure. Just how dominant Alcaraz has been, and particularly how his game specifically does match up against Alex. So he's really able to sort of have answers everywhere you look there when Alex plays. Alex just probably lacks a little bit of a knockout punch for someone so good and who is so athletic in Carlos Alcaraz. So, no, to answer your question, I think it was probably a little closer, but not a great surprise to anyone, the actual result, just given what we've seen from Alcaraz over the past 3 years.
I reckon tennis fans, particularly in Australia today, are asking themselves a pretty familiar question, and that's how Alex de Minaur can make the jump. I mean, it was so revealing for me to hear Alex and Carlos identify the same thing, that the Australian has had to play out of his comfort zone in order just to have a chance.
There was some good parts out there, but overall I'm playing out of my comfort zone and at times out of my skin. And for me to take that next step, I've got to be comfortable in playing that sort of way for the whole match. And that's what it takes to take it to the next level, especially against these types of guys.
Is there a positive in the fact that he was willing to do that? Is that in and of itself a kind of growth?
I think so. And look, knowing Alex personally, like I do, and talk about someone who's maximising and has maximised their potential every single day, he's that character. He's absolutely 100% every day waking up going, how can I get better? What can I do? He just hasn't been able to find any solutions, whether it's Sinner or Alcaraz. And those two guys are so much better than anyone else at the moment on the men's tour.
Sensational. Even if you're a de Minaur fan, you have to admire that.
This is intimidating, even commenting on this.
I don't think it's just specifically targeted towards Alex. It's trying to find answers and solutions. How can you use what game style you have and what weapons you have just to try and, you know, potentially disrupt their amazing level, given that they've played in the last 8 Grand Slam finals over the last couple of years. So you've got to find some solutions to disrupt. I'm sure Alex will go back to the drawing board once again. And you know, he's got a point of difference, the fact that he can actually come in and volley. I'm not saying that's necessarily the answer, but he'll certainly keep chipping away. There's no doubt about it.
And if we're talking about changes to make that jump, the one de Minaur zeroed in on was revolutions. And if he wants to cause something of a revolution to the tennis world order that you're sort of talking about, you know, he sort of thinks it starts with the revs he is putting on the ball.
In this case, your Yannicks and your Carlos, they've got so many revolutions on the ball that they're able to not only play at a higher speed, but also have that consistency because they're able to get, you know, that spin that helps the ball come down and create different angles as well.
From a coaching perspective, someone who has lived in that world like yourself, why is that easier said than done? Why is that a hard thing to transition to put more revs on the ball?
Well, because then what that potentially changes is your overall technique, because you then swing harder, Your swing pattern can look different, can feel different. You must never forget what's got you there, what's got you to number six in the world. So anytime you start changing revolution or trying to swing harder, your technique can change. And that's where I'm always a little cautious.
Some tweaks here and there that's going to allow me to increase ball speed, because at the moment, the way my natural ground strokes are, they're quite flat, and it's quite difficult for me. I mean, there's a whole lot of risk for me to play at a very high ball speed.
There's other ways. You can tinker with your racket setup. You can potentially have a looser string set. You can have a more powerful racket. You can have a more powerful string. There's other ways, not just in terms of putting revolutions in them through swinging harder. So again, I would imagine he will leave no stone unturned, and they're the sort of things that he could potentially be looking at. But it's very hard at the age of 26 to all of a sudden say, I'm going to hit the ball 20% bigger. That just doesn't sort of typically happen overnight. If he can get, you know, gradual improvements, you know, through training, through going to the gym, through technique, well, you know, maybe he's a chance in a year or two.
We also saw, it felt to me, Alex carrying himself with a little bit more swagger this last week. This guy is humble. He is understated. But whether it was, you know, occasions where he was reminding people that, hey, I can play some ball too, or maybe bristling at certain moments around the idea that bigger hitting opponents might blow him off court.
Got tired of the narrative that these big hitters can take the racket out of my hands. And over the years, I've kept on improving. I've kept on getting more and more out of myself. And one of the things I've been constantly wanting to get to is exactly that. When I'm playing big hitters, not be a punching bag for them.
Have you seen it all from him? A shift in mindset? Is this guy someone who is getting incrementally more comfortable with the level of stage that he is at tournament after tournament?
I think he's completely comfortable. And I think probably what might frustrate him a fraction is that the public here can see such a big divide, but it's not just here, as I'm alluding to. It's a worldwide issue for these tennis players. And it's not just Alex. It's all these guys up against the likes of Sinner and Alcaraz. But I do think he's very comfortable where he's at. He's been there for the last 2 years now in that sort of ranking band. And look, I think he's I wouldn't say he's overachieving, but I think he's absolutely maximizing his ability. And I do think that he feels a sense of belonging there, and he's just trying absolutely everything he possibly can to try and unlock how he can maybe go one or two spots higher. I don't think he's going, well, I'm going to be number one or two. I think he's looking at how can I take that next step and get to a semi of a Grand Slam, which he just has not been able to find yet.
From a broader tournament perspective, I'm really interested in what you saw from Carlos Alcaraz in that match against Alex de Minaur. You've sort of, I guess, highlighted the fact that him and Jannik Sinner are in a league of their own. From what you saw from Alcaraz and what you've seen from his chief rival, Jannik Sinner, so far across this tournament, who do you have sort of in front from a form perspective at this stage of the tournament?
Well, it's a really good question, because if you would have asked me before Alcaraz played Alex last night, I actually didn't think either of them sort of had hit their straps, but that was a very pumped up and fired up Alcaraz last night, and he changed gears clearly to win that in straight sets. So I thought he was very good.
I'm just really happy with the way that I'm just playing every match. I think since the first round until now, I think my level, I was increasing my level every match, which I'm just really, really happy about it.
I don't think we've seen the best of Jannik Sinner, given that match he went through where it was incredibly hot that day and was pretty lucky to get through. So as we know, these two, they get better as the tournament goes on. They have an uncanny ability to peak at the very, you know, right time. So it's tough for me to call. I'd be reluctant to go either one, but I was very impressed with Alcaraz last night. I thought he certainly did take it to another level. And let's just see how Sinner goes tonight against Ben Shelton, if he can get through that and then get to the semis, and then, you know, I think it's 50-50 at this stage.
Just one to finish on the women's side of things. Coco Gauff, the women's third seed, suffered a surprise thumping from Elena Svitolina, and she dismantled her racket behind the scenes in the wake of that. That was broadcast, and it was intriguing to me to hear Coco really speaking out about her distaste for that.
I have a thing with the broadcast. I feel like certain moments, the same thing happened to Irina after I played her final US Open. I feel like they don't need to broadcast. I tried to go somewhere where I thought there wasn't a camera, because I don't necessarily like breaking rackets, but I lost one and two. I tried to go somewhere where they wouldn't broadcast it, but obviously they did. So yeah, maybe some conversations we can be had, because I feel like at this tournament, the only private place we have is the locker room.
Does she have a point around the idea of sort of no areas of privacy, or is that kind of the reality of being a megastar at a Grand Slam tournament? That is what comes with the territory. When you are on site, your life is essentially content.
I think so. I think that's just where our world has come to, and you know, they've just got to be used to it. And there's not a lot these players can do about it. I mean, she's this genuine superstar, worldwide superstar, Coco Gauff. It's a fishbowl, the world she must live in. So, look, she tried to do it in private, and she wouldn't be the only player who loses and walks off and does that. And yeah, it was a bit of a shame. Look, she just hasn't played well all summer, I don't think. She started her campaign in the United Cup and just didn't play. She just hasn't played well and was probably just genuinely frustrated with her form and her performance. And yeah, I mean, it's it is what it is. You can't play well 12 months a year. You're going to have bad times. But, you know, she's won a Grand Slam each of the last couple of seasons. So I wouldn't be surprised if she goes on and wins another Slam this year.
Josh, so good to get your insights at this Australian Open. Appreciate your time. Thanks so much, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Headlines. Staying with the women's side of the AO, world number two Iga Swiatek is out, beaten in straight sets by fifth seed Elena Rybakina. There are huge names in action from here on in. So tune in to ABC Listen to get live coverage commercial free, or check out the ABC website for rolling coverage and analysis. You might know that Jay Vine won the Tour Down Under, but did you know the Aussie cyclist did it with a busted wrist? The 30-year-old was involved in a crash that was a result of two kangaroos getting tangled with a peloton in maybe the most Australian cycling scenario imaginable. Vine won despite that injury, but now needs surgery. He will miss the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race. John Florence won't be returning to competitive surfing this year, at least in a full-time capacity. The 2024 world champ took a sabbatical to sail the world with his family last year, and it looks like more of the same is on the agenda for the Star Hawaiian. He says it's not retirement, and you imagine he might do the odd event this year when it suits him, but really, can you just imagine sailing the world with your family and just getting into adventures? No wonder he's doing that. Finally, some sad news from the world of football, with Rado Vidicic dying aged 64 from cancer. Vidicic worked across five A-League clubs, including as head coach of Brisbane Roar. His son Dario went on to represent the Socceroos and confirmed the news on Instagram, saying in part, "I'm heartbroken to share that my father has passed after a battle with cancer. I will carry your wisdom in my steps and your strength in my heart." I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to Channel 9 for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.